Hello, and welcome to another episode of Beyond Busy, the show where we talk productivity, work-life balance, and defining happiness and success. My name is Graham Alcott. I'm your host for the show. And on this episode, it's another COVID special, and we are talking working from home. This is actually the audio from the first of Think Productive's webinars, which was myself and Grace Marshall on the Productivity Ninja's Guide to Working from Home. So we recorded this about a month ago. We've been running these as live webinars most days. And at the moment, it's kind of once or twice a week. And you can find out the dates at thinkproductive.com/WFH. Also on there, there's a load of info about how we can help your team, your organization, your company with a whole variety of stuff that's either specific to what's going on with COVID, so working from home, leading remote teams, how to supercharge your virtual meetings, but also all of our regular stuff as well. So how to be a productivity ninja, how to get your inbox to zero, all that sort of normal productivity stuff that we do. So we're going to talk in this special webinar for an hour. It's myself and Grace Marshall. We'll talk about a few of the key challenges of working from home. We'll talk about how to solve them. And we just thought, let's use the audio and get this out there and make this a podcast episode as well. So let's get straight into it. Here is our live webinar in audio form with myself and Grace Marshall. Let's do it. So welcome, everybody. We'll just leave our contact details here right at the beginning. So my name is Graham Alcott. I'm here with Grace Marshall.
Hello.
We have basically written this as a response to obviously what's happening out there in the world. So this didn't exist a week ago. and we've since had the first broadcast of this was actually in Australia about 12 hours ago or so. And just for context, we have dates pretty much for every day over the next couple of weeks, and it's all live at thinkproductive.com, WFH, working from home. So if you know people who didn't manage to get onto this first one, know that there'll be more of these coming. So you're all on mute automatically. The chat is open, as Grace was saying, and we're here for an hour. So let's get cracking through some stuff. If you don't know who we are, by the way, so we're Think Productive. For the last decade or so, we've been on a mission to help people with everything to do with productivity. So we run sessions called things like getting your inbox to zero, fixing meetings, and of course, stuff related to my book, How to Be a Productivity Ninja. So there's a whole bunch of stuff that we do predominantly in-house with clients. So we work, in your offices, and obviously shifting a lot of that to live virtual in the current environment as well. What we're going to talk about on this hour is some of the common pitfalls of working from home, how to get started, how to get good work done. We're going to talk about dealing with uncertainty, both in your own work and just philosophically with what's going on in the world right now. And then we'll talk about work-life balance and what to do at the end of a working day to just kind of help with that as well. So let's get started. Over to Grace.
Yeah. So Graham, do you want to launch a poll first to just see what kind of people we have and where your starting point is at the moment?
Yes. So let's chuck that on there.
So this is a poll asking you, what's your work from home starting point? Are you completely new to this? Have you dabbled with it, but you're not feeling confident? Or are you fairly confident and you're here, may need to pick up some tips? Or are you a black belt master, so you should be running the session rather than us? Or maybe you're just here to pick up some stuff that you can share with your colleagues. So just to give us an idea of sort of where you're coming from, what your starting point is at the moment, so we can see who we've got on the call.
So 63% of people saying fairly confident, 3% of you are the black belt masters. So good to have you guys here as well. And a lot of people dabbling and completely new. So that's useful context for us.
Great. Brilliant. Okay. So let's get started with some of the common pitfalls then. So I guess, we've worked with people across the whole spectrum. We work with people who work from home predominantly. We've worked with people who sometimes work from home. And here are the things that we commonly see. Don't worry about if you can't see the poll. We've only got one poll. So if the technology is not allowing you to see it, don't worry about that. So common pitfalls. First of all, it's work-life blur. So you've got the issue of sometimes when you're working from home and you're living at home, it's the same space, life can bleed into work, but also work can bleed into life. Then there's also the issue of connection. So I'm already seeing a lot of people are feeling like, okay, feeling isolated, feeling disconnected. I'm used to being around people, used to being in the office, and now I'm stuck at home by myself. Now, depending on your personality, some people might actually feel quite comfortable with that. Like Graham, this is not any different from how you normally work, right?
So actually, a lot of my work is from home. Think Productive, actually, a fairly remote team. So most of our productivity ninjas are based around the UK. They'll maybe come to the office once a year, something like that. And me personally, even though I'm based in Brighton and our office is 5 minutes down the road in Hove, I'm probably there myself physically once a month, if that. So this is very familiar terrain for me. And also, I think that gives us a good perspective of the last 10 years or so working like this. We've got plenty to share. So, yeah.
Whereas for me, I mean, this is familiar terrain, but as an extrovert, I miss people. So, you know, those extroverts among you, you might be feeling the same as well. So there might be a feeling of disconnection. But at the same time, there could also be a feeling of overconnection. You know, the fact that there are so many different ways to get in touch with each other. You might have your instant messenger and your text and your WhatsApp and your emails all pinging at the same time. It can feel like everyone wants a piece of me, more so now that you're working from home compared to when you're in the office. And then the third thing is this issue of defining success. So like it or not, when we're working in the office, there are some go-to physical clues that we can see when it looks like we're working hard and we're busy. So whether that's a queue of people coming up to your desk or you're like furiously typing away, there's something visible about the work. Whereas when we start working from home, it becomes more invisible. And then we start to grapple, how do we grapple with looking like we're doing good work? How do I prove to my boss that I am working hard? And what happens sometimes for some people we find is that they end up working even longer hours and they don't take breaks. They don't even get up to go to the loo until you're absolutely desperate because it's like, oh, if I don't reply to things really quickly, if I don't look like I'm working, then what if somebody thinks that I'm just watching daytime TV? So there's this whole thing of defining success. And I think there's an opportunity here as well in terms of how we define success, how we define what good productivity looks like rather than just what looks busy.
And I think in general, there's, you know, for me, something really important about the fact that generally working from home is a much maligned thing. And here's a little quote from Einstein, in the middle of difficulty lies opportunity. I think whilst there's lots of bleak stuff happening in the world right now, what we are seeing is certainly a reframing of things. So a reframing of things like community, for example, seems to be something that's happening in lots of places, neighbors setting up WhatsApp groups and the like. And I think this has some implications for how we view productivity and managing our attention and various other things, rather than looking at working from home as this slightly, you know, guilty feeling of, oh, working from home, are you really? And all that sort of thing. Actually, we might start to reframe working from home as something much more positive as a result of all of this as well. So let's get started. How do we get started? What does it mean to actually get to work? Grace?
Yeah, absolutely. So getting to work, hopefully, is a really easy question to answer now in terms of actually physically getting to work because you don't have to do the commute anymore. But actually, how do we get into work mode? So the interesting thing is that our brains are designed to respond to signals. And even if we don't notice it, our normal everyday routine has a way of telling us, okay, you're getting into work mode now. So you might be thinking, this is great. I don't have to commute. I don't have to deal with traffic or the tube or the rush hour. But actually, your brain might still need a few signals putting in, programming in, to help you think, okay, now I'm in work mode compared to being in home mode. So you might find it helpful to maybe even give yourself a fake commute. So it might be like a walk around the block if you're allowed to, depending on where in the world you are. Or, you know, even just having a bit of a familiar routine that you do as a way of going, okay, now I'm transitioning from home mode to being in work mode. So yeah, have a play with those fake routines, fake commutes. But also, you know, it can be little things like, you know, what am I wearing, for example? So you might think, okay, now that I'm working from home, one of the beautiful things I can do is stay in bed. Graham, have we got the next slide? Yeah, brilliant. So, you know, I could just work from home. I could work in my pajamas. I could be really comfy. Now, if that works for you, fine. But the caveat here is sometimes you might find you have to get into work mode by putting on some work clothes. So, for example, I remember working with a financial advisor once who transitioned to working for himself. And he said, actually, the thing he was most looking forward to was not having to put a suit and tie on. But he found that until he put a suit and tie on, he didn't feel like he was in work mode. So even though he didn't have to for other people, he had to for himself. Similarly, I was doing some housework the other day and I had my shoes on because I was going out to the bins. And I found that the minute I took my shoes off and put my slippers on, I just wanted to sit down. I just wanted to get comfy. So you might find that actually, you know, putting on certain clothes, you might be putting your makeup on, putting shoes on, those kind of things, or even your cup. So my husband has a work cup that he has, and that helps him to get into work mode. And psychologists actually have a word for this. They call this enclosed cognition. And so it comes from a little study they did where they were measuring people's concentration. And with half the group, they gave them lab coats, like scientist lab coats to wear. And when they wore the lab coat, they actually made fewer errors. When they told them that the lab coat actually belonged to a painter, the errors went up again. So there's something really bizarre about the way our brain associates different moods, different attention levels with what we wear.
And a little tip, if you want a brain signifier and you're not able to leave the house, aside from clothes, one of the things I've used quite a lot before is the Joe Wicks HIIT training type of stuff. So it's like 10, 15 minutes of exercise. But do that, then have a shower, and then it's like, now I'm getting into my work clothes. So just to create some kind of, you know, like mental transition basically between I'm lounging around at home, having my breakfast, that kind of thing, and suddenly now I'm in that kind of more work-based mode. So let's talk about physical space. And this is one of those things where, you know, people will be in very different situations. If you have the ability to put your working space in a dedicated room or a specific part of the house, then that's great. If you are working from the kitchen table, you might not feel so lucky. So what are some of the things that we can think about in terms of managing physical space? So one thing to say is try to avoid distractions and multitasking as much as possible. So for example, even if you're working from the kitchen table, try not to be starting to boil the pasta while you're still on a conference call and that kind of stuff. Try and keep a good delineation between those two things. Rather than multitasking, which was always seen as like the holy grail in old time management type books, think about monotasking. So working on one thing up to its completion point, and then the next thing, and then the next thing, and also enacting that physically. So only having open on the screen in front of you windows that relate to the thing that you're actually working on. Don't have all these different windows open and lots of stuff going on. Likewise, don't have paperwork on the desk in front of you that relates to some other part of work or some other part of life. And you'd be amazed at the focus that you gain just by doing that. One of the workshops we do called Getting Your Inbox to Zero, there's this tiny little tip in there, which is turn off your email notifications. And it's probably the thing that I get the most emails back about, saying that feedback changed my life, that little thing changed my life, is just turning off those notifications so you don't have that thing in the corner of the screen popping up all the time, trying to get your attention about something else. So keeping focus is as much about what you do physically and in the environment in front of you as it is about, you know, mentally how you think as well. So let's talk about getting good work done. So good work for me looks like having a really good intention, being focused, being purposeful, and as I said before, monotasking, focusing really on one thing at a time to do really quality thinking. And sadly, that's not how we always spend our time. One thing to say is that if you generally find that there are days in your working week where you feel a little bit overwhelmed, the chances are you're feeling that tenfold with what's happening in the world right now. So there's a lovely Buddhist saying, which I think is really appropriate when we think about productivity, in order to really just make the point that what's good productivity advice normally is even better productivity advice now. So this Buddhist saying is, you should meditate for half an hour a day, except when you're busy. Then you should meditate for an hour a day. So all those good practice productivity things are things that we need to take more seriously now, not less. So a little reminder from the original Productivity Ninja, you know, it's really important to just, you know, pay some attention to the kind of base level, simple productivity tips. One of the things around this, which I hope a good few of you are doing already is the idea of having a second brain, having a place where you download all of those bits of information, ideas, decisions, nags, all that stuff that's going on in your head, particularly at a time like this. So think about times where you've been one day away from a holiday period and then you write a big list of stuff and you just feel more in control and you just feel better as a result of doing that. So this is a really good tip for right now. Just get it all out of your head. Scientists call this distributed cognition, which basically means once you write it down, you have a better ability to prioritize stuff, to you know really add value to your own thinking and priorities and really get the best out of your thinking. So getting it all out of your head into what we call a second brain. So I use an app. The one I use is called Nosby. There's an app called Todoist, which is really, really good and popular too.
Remember the milk.
Grace is a Todoist fan. And, you know, so there's a whole number of apps. If you're not a big fan of apps, you can do this on pen and paper as well. But getting stuff down so that you basically have two main lists. You have a projects list. So that's the list of all the stuff that you're working on and what those conclusions look like. How do you define success in different areas? And then the next physical action that you need to take around each of those things. So being really well-defined around that so that you can physically see yourself doing that next thing. So for example, chase is not a next physical action. You know, calling someone or emailing someone or mind mapping, those are next physical actions that you can do. So really being specific with language will help you when you come to look at your to-do list to have much more momentum around the things that you're doing. And it's really important to be thinking about you know, how we think and our own, you know, base level of productivity habits in particularly in times like this. We need to think about it, you know, really as if we're simultaneously trying to do two things at the same time. So all of us who work in knowledge work, where essentially it's about adding value and creating value out of information in some way or another, we're all simultaneously the boss and the worker all at the same time. So as well as having to actually deliver on work, we also have to do the thinking and the definition and defining what work actually means for us and what the end point looks like. So, you know, being really conscious that we need to separate these two things, working out when we're in thinking mode versus when we're in doing mode. And, you know, particularly, you know, what I'm always passionate about is helping people to make space for quality thinking. This feels like a particular time where everyone is, you know, spending a lot of time being very reactive. And it's really hard to make that space for quality thinking. But, you know, without beating ourselves up about it, the more we can try and make that space, the better we'll feel in the end.
Yeah, absolutely. And one of the boss mode thinking things you can do, or one of the routines you can get into, is start your day with boss mode thinking. So rather than starting your day with maybe checking your emails and checking Facebook and checking everything else, rather than checking in with everybody else's agenda, maybe start your day by checking in with your agenda first. So go into boss mode, do some thinking, and maybe plan your top five priorities for today. So if you have a good second brain set up, don't treat that second brain like a to-do list that you've just got to keep plowing on through. You know, maybe start to look at constraining and saying, well, if I could only do five things today, what five things would they be? So a good practice is to maybe use a post-it note, because that's a good way of constraining and saying like it has to fit onto a post-it note. Otherwise, if you've got too much on there, you've got too much going on. And it has a really good way of helping you to be ruthless, to start thinking what really matters here. So rather than doing 50 things badly, what five things can I do well today and feel really good about getting those things done?
And I think starting the day by being mindful. So starting the day by really thinking about what do I need for me? What's my intention? What's my energy? Rather than starting the day with the news or email or stuff that you're going to react to, I think can be a really good place to start as well. Let's have a think about attention levels. So this is something that I talk about in my book, How to Be a Productivity Ninja. But we basically have three types of attention. And this is really important, particularly right now. So we have the 2 to 3 hours a day where we are most switched on, we have the best energy, and we're able to do our best work. And I call that proactive attention. And at the other end of the scale, which is kind of like the red light on our traffic light here, we have inactive attention. So otherwise known as the kind of mindless zombie attention.
Zombie mode.
Yeah, zombie mode. So this is where it's like, you know, we've all been there. It's 4 o'clock in the afternoon. You're looking through your email inbox. You're scrolling up and scrolling down. And you know there's stuff you should be doing, but the lights are on and no one's home. So that's inactive attention. And then somewhere in the middle, we have this active attention where, yeah, we can do most of the stuff on our list, maybe not the most difficult stuff, but certainly better than when we're in that zombie mode. So dividing your tasks up into these three different types of attention is a really helpful tip. And in particular, having two or three parts of your to-do list that really relate to these two. So I have a particular mode on my to-do list, which is like a proactive attention mode. So the stuff I know is going to be really difficult and really tricky, I separate that out on the to-do list so it actually, I can see that and make sure when I know my energy is really good, which for me tends to be in the morning. It's not for everybody, but that is for me. It wasn't when I was younger, by the way. It's just something that kind of changed through life, I think. But I know that during those times, I need to make sure I'm being disciplined enough to do the most difficult stuff on my list during that time. So I'm going straight for those kind of things in the morning. And then likewise, I also, the flip side of that is not beating myself up, trying to do difficult stuff or even half difficult stuff when I'm in that zombie mode at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. So I've also got another list, which mine is just called Mindless on my to-do list. And it's like, it's all the stuff like ordering stuff off Amazon and doing a little bit of research on this thing, whatever, things that I can kind of do with my eyes half shut and, you know, not beating myself up about those times and trying to be more productive than that, but just having some useful things to do when you don't necessarily have the best attention. And then it's about how we protect that proactive attention. So that 2 to 3 hours that we have of our proactive attention, where really we want to be heads down. Cal Newport calls this the monk mode in his book, Deep Work. Really focused on doing quality thinking, quality prioritization, creativity, problem solving, all the stuff that our brains are really, really good at. And we need to really make sure that we protect that attention as much as possible because it can get pretty scrambled. This is where one thing that comes in really handy here is the productivity ninja characteristic of stealth and camouflage. So what this found was, there was a study a while ago that found that if you have a 1 minute email interruption, then it takes you about 15 minutes to recover from that. So getting into stealth and camouflage mode is about saying there must be times in our day where we're actually trying to be deliberately a bit less available. And, you know, in an open plan office, this kind of looks like tactical hiding, right? So we quite often, when we're in companies, talk to people about this idea of tactical hiding. People don't tend to feel too bad about taking 2 hours away from their desk to go and sit in someone else's meeting, even if it doesn't necessarily help them solve their part of the world's work. But people feel very guilty about the idea of taking even half an hour away to do really useful planning or quality thinking. And we need to really end this whole sense of guilt around making the space and the time to focus and do quality thinking. Now, of course, where we're at right now, people have a lot of time at home. It's not really necessarily the case that people need to be hiding away from their desk physically, but we do need to be thinking about digital stealth and camouflage. And so what does that look like in practice? So my favorite button on Microsoft Outlook is the one in the middle there, where it's just circled in red, or squared in red, I should say, where it says work offline. So that's a really useful button. What that will do is it will allow you to turn off all the incoming new messages, but you can still work on the emails that you've got in front of you. You can still see your calendar and anything else that's in Outlook, contacts, etc. But it just allows you to catch up, switch off the rest of the world for a bit, and really focus. So particularly if you've got, you know, one or two emails that you really need to work on and you just don't need to be distracted by lots of other noise in that time period, that can be a really handy little button to use. Also, thinking about your phone and your relationship with your phone, I definitely think in the last few years, the biggest sort of developing challenge around productivity generally is our relationship with our phones. And let's not beat around the bush. The brightest minds in the world are sat in Silicon Valley right now, as they always are, and their entire job is trying to steal as much of your attention as possible to get you to click on and look at ads. That's the world, right? So I use a particular phone blocker app called Quality Time, which is an Android app. You can also use things like Freedom and Off Time on the iPhone, and even some of the iPhone's built-in capability. But the idea is it will block your access to certain apps at certain times. So if you've decided, I want to only look at news in the afternoon, or if you've decided I don't want to see emails between 9 and 11, or I don't want to be able to have access to Instagram until lunchtime. Like making those decisions, making them in a really kind of strict way once, and then setting up a blocker app will save you so many times of getting interrupted and just allow you to really focus. A nice little app is called Forest as well, which solves this problem of, I'm typing away on my, Word document or whatever it is. And then I get a bit bored and it's like, let me go and see what's on my phone. Ooh, what's happening? You know, it's really easy to derail ourselves and distract ourselves. So what Forest does is you set the thing for, say, let's say I'm going to work for half an hour, totally focused for that half an hour period. And Forest in that time grows a tree on the screen. And then if during that time you flip off the Forest app to go and look at Instagram or something, the tree dies. So it's a really nice, simple little piece of positive psychology to say, I'm not going to look at my phone. I'm going to get totally focused, heads down, in that mode of using that quality attention as best as I possibly can. Another way of managing attention is to really think about working in particular bursts. And there's this guy, Francesco Cirillo, who invented the Pomodoro technique, named after the kitchen timers that look like tomatoes. And the idea is you work for 25 minutes, and then you have what he calls a five-minute procrastination break. So 5 minutes to do whatever you want, and then 25 minutes back on the Pomodoro. And, everything that you work on, you measure in number of Pomodoros. So I'm working on this report. It's going to take me 3 Pomodoros or whatever it might be. And so it's a really nice way. It's not something that I use day to day, but I definitely have used it in the past when I've been in book writing mode. So I'm going to work on this chapter for 2 Pomodoros this morning, and then I'll do another couple of Pomodoros on it in the afternoon. And it's a really nice thing because it's a bit like when you watch the TV show Countdown, for those of you familiar with Countdown, and it's like you work really fast and your brain's working really fast because time is counting down when it usually counts up. And it's like, I've only got 5 more seconds to do this or 5 more minutes to finish this bit of writing, whatever. So just knowing that time has some scarcity is sometimes a nice thing in terms of helping you focus as well.
It's also really good for the things that you hate doing. So I find if I put a timer on, it's like, oh, the end is in sight. So that's really nice. And that's
And it's like, I only have to work on it for 1 Pomodoro, right?
Exactly.
So it's just changing that psychology from being, I have to do all of it.
Definitely. And that's a good example of a frog. So there's a little book by a guy called Brian Tracy called Eat That Frog. And your frog is the unpleasant task that's been hanging around on your to-do list like a bad smell. And the thing about frogs is the longer you leave it, the worse they seem to smell. And when you finally get on with it, it's often not as bad as you thought. So the idea here is if you eat a frog for breakfast, everything you have afterwards is going to taste sweet. And so you might want to start your day with the hard thing first, get it out of the way. Then actually everything else is going to be easy by comparison, and you've set yourself up for with momentum and motivation for the rest of the day. Now, this is also, it's also a Mark Twain quote, absolutely. So this is also a good way of something you can do virtually. So you could have a frog buddy, an accountability buddy. You could set up a virtual check-in session. So I've done this before with my colleague, Cara. A little while ago, we were both working on a similar project. And we just had a day, like a make it happen day, where we checked in at the beginning and went, right, what are you working on first? What am I working on? And then we check in again mid-morning. How did you get on? And then we have different check-ins throughout the day. And it was a great way of keeping us both motivated, keeping that momentum going. And also any places where we got stuck or we needed some input, we had those check-in times to do that. So that could be something that you maybe build into some of your work from home routines and setups. So yeah, let's talk about why we need breaks. Lunchtime, right? And it's not just lunchtime, actually. This is why we need breaks. So I don't know if you've come across the decision fatigue research, but basically this was a piece of research where they looked at a bunch of parole board judges and looked at how often would they say yes to parole and how often would they say no to parole. And they found that at the beginning of the day, your chances of getting parole were about 60%. As the day went on, your chances go down. After a break, they go back up again. Just before lunchtime, you've got no chance. And at the end of the day, you've also got no chance. So what they found was that your ability to make good judgment decisions is like a muscle. Yes, you can train it to do more, but after each decision you make, after each rep, that muscle gets tired, it gets fatigued. And when we get to decision fatigue, we basically get to the point where we just go to our defaults. So for a parole board judge, the default is no, because that's the safest answer. But then the question for us is, what's my default when I hit decision fatigue? Working with one of our clients a little while ago, a company that maybe has a little bit of a meetings addiction, they found that their default was, let's have another meeting. So they actually started creating more and more decisions to make rather than less. And so, being able to recognize that this is why you need a break. So that's how we recover our attention. That's how we get back to that place where we can do good thinking. And actually, that's the value of the work that we do, is where we're making good decisions and we're doing good thinking. And so taking breaks, maybe, you know, starting to have your breaks with other people as well. So for those of you who are thinking, I'm really missing my colleagues, I'm missing that banter around the water cooler, around having coffee, how do I recreate that? So it might be doing some virtual coffee or virtual lunch breaks. If you want to do that with, you know, socializing with people outside of work, that's fine too. You can maybe catch up with your friends that way, you know, if you don't want to do that with your colleagues. But actually, there's something about maybe using your breaks as a way to reconnect with other people or reconnect with yourself. So if you're an introvert and actually you want to have some time to yourself, then make sure those breaks are high value breaks, high value treats. So often our defaults are to go to, oh, I'll just scroll on the phone and see what's new on Facebook or what's happening on the news. But if you find that actually at the end of that, you feel worse for it, it's a bit like junk food. It might feel like, oh yeah, that's my easy go-to at the, you know, in the instant. But afterwards, if I'm feeling worse, then that's not a high value break. So it might be swapping that instead for maybe some garden time, being outdoors, or listen to a piece of music or watch a TED talk, read a book, play the violin. That's mine. You know, I love playing the violin to switch off. So whatever it is that helps you to actually feel good afterwards is a really good monitor, a really good way of seeing that's a high value break.
Yeah, I think I work with so many people who they spend all of their day looking at messages and then they spend all their evening scrolling through different messages on different apps. And I think looking at how can you make your break times, evening times, look and feel different from what you're doing during the day, especially if you're going to be in the same place the whole time, I think it's really important. Just a quick word while we're talking about lunch, about food and fuel. So I wrote this book with a nutritionist called Colette Hennigan a couple of years ago called Work Fuel, after spending a lot of time being coached by Colette. And it really changed my life around nutrition. And what you see on the screen there is the Work Fuel plate. So this is based on the science of what we should eat to have the best energy for productivity. 50% of our food should be rainbow plants, 25% smarter carbs, 25% proteins. And then thinking particularly about the kind of oils and hydration and everything else that goes into that as well. That is the science of what to eat to have the best energy. One thing that Colette says that I think is really helpful when you work from home, there was a time where I was sending her pictures of all the food that I was eating. And I sent her this really awful, I don't know what it was, beans on toast or like something that was like a bit suboptimal. It might have just been toast with Marmite. And I was like, this is all I've got in the house. And she sent me back this beautiful bowl of stuff with quinoa in it and all this stuff. And I was kind of in defensive mode going, yeah, well, I've got nothing in the house and whatever. And Colette said, you eat well when you have good food in your fridge. And that's something I've really taken on over the last few years. So just always having a bag of salad in there, always having, you know, wraps handy, you know, for me, it's falafel, and also thinking about what we might have in terms of tinned food that can help. So one thing that is definitely still on the shelves a lot at the moment is tinned fish. And there's a lot of people who will sort of poo-poo the idea of tinned food or, you know, tinned fish, but actually it's equally as nutritious. So thinking about some of those things that we can just have in the cupboards, in the fridge, that will just help us to make really quick but good choices. And it doesn't have to take long. So most of the lunches I make for myself take no more than 3 or 4 minutes to just throw things together. But it's easier to eat healthy when you have that, sort of good starting point to begin with. Let's talk about communications. In particular, something that many of you, I'm sure, will be experiencing either for the first time or in much higher frequency than normal is virtual meetings. So we run a whole session called Supercharge Your Virtual Meetings. We just wanted to give you kind of 5 real quick tips. First around this is kind of coming back to this idea of pining for the water cooler and trying to look at how you can replace some of that kind of social time. Add in 5 minutes at the beginning to let people get set up properly, have a bit of a chat, maybe have some coffee time. We've done it before where we're on Think Productive meetings. We've had, you know, 20 minutes, half an hour of just kind of coffee chat before we start. And that's scheduled in. So once you've got that scheduled in, it just allows people to connect in a more human way before you start. Stand up. I'm on a standing desk right now. But this is really useful if most of your time in an office would be going to a meeting and then getting up and walking back to your desk, walking to the next meeting room and so on. And you're losing that by being at home all day. Spend a bit more of the time standing up. That phrase, sitting is the new smoking. It's actually not healthy if you just stand up all day, but it's really good to be flitting in between sitting and standing. Starting the day with check-in or opening round when you start a meeting. So, just asking people to share perhaps like something that's going on around around your house, or sharing one thing that's going well, or your sort of personal experience through what we're dealing with right now. But starting with something a bit human and allowing everybody to speak, because what you're losing by not having face-to-face, even when you have the camera turned on, which I think is a really good default, you're kind of losing a little bit of that kind of physicality, body language, and so on. So having some kind of way of just making sure that people connect before you get into the content. The chat function can be really useful, particularly for things like, does everyone agree? And rather than everyone say, yes, and you kind of don't know when you're about to talk over someone often with video calls, just using the chat for those kind of things. And using the chat also for people to throw ideas, and suddenly you can have 50 ideas on the screen in much less time than it would take everyone to wait for their turn to speak. So sometimes, virtual meetings can actually be even more optimal than standard ones. And finally, one way that I think virtual meetings are definitely more optimal than being together is you can take the action points live on the screen, and therefore you have absolutely no doubt over what different things mean. It's all there on the screen with real clarity. And I think that can be a really powerful and useful thing. Get clear. So let's talk about communications manifestos. What you see on the left-hand side of the screen there is Think Productive's own communications manifesto. This is just something that we set up to just say, we're going to use Slack for these things. We're going to use email for these things. We're going to use this particular channel for this thing. And just this really helped to get a sense of what we're using for different parts of our work. And I think that's a really handy thing to develop. So if you don't have something clearly written down around that, I think that's a really handy thing. And have something on your own to-do list where you just keep categories for particular people. So for example, with your line manager, if you've got 15 things a day that you're going to end up talking to them about, store those up on your to-do list. And then when they call you, or if you're calling them, then you've got all those things ready to go through, rather than it be 100 different things that might get missed and 100 different emails and so on. And then manage expectations. This is a couple of screen grabs from Think Productive's own Slack channel from last week. So, managing expectations about when you're going to be online versus offline, and what you're doing in that, being slightly offline time. And then obviously managing the expectations around when you're available, when you're not, where the boundaries are with that. So I think it's, really important in these kind of times to really, to talk about boundaries, and then particularly to talk about hard boundaries versus soft boundaries. So are there particular things that you want to know about even when you're in childcare mode versus don't tell me about anything else until I'm back in that work mode? And even in these very difficult times, I think it's quite important to try and delineate between when am I in work mode versus when am I not. There was a case the other day where someone was trying to be in work mode and then their child had an accident because they weren't supervising their kid. And so, we really need to think about that from a kind of duty of care point of view, those of us with kids, and also duty of care to people in terms of managing their own lives and stress around this stuff, even if you don't have kids. So, I'm a big believer that when you're offline, you should be offline. When you're not working, you shouldn't be working. And so if you want to make exceptions to that, be really clear about what those exceptions might be.
Definitely. Okay, let's talk about dealing with uncertainty. So this is why we struggle with change and uncertainty. It's something called our lizard brain. You might also know it as your chimp brain. It's basically a little part of our brain called the amygdala, which is the primitive part of our brain that's responsible for keeping us alive. And it tends to do that by putting us into either fight or flight mode. It's responsible for that kind of fight or flight stress response. And our lizard brain basically sees all change as threat. So when things are changing so quickly at the moment, chances are your lizard brain will be hyperactive. Yes, you can freeze as well. There's that kind of response. But your lizard brain will be seeing every single change as like, oh my goodness, I've got to do something about that. That could be a threat. That could be a threat. That can be danger. And so, one of the things we need to do is start to recognize when is that lizard brain at play, and maybe just pausing for a bit. There's a really useful acronym around decision making called HALT. And so that is basically, don't make any decisions when you're hungry, angry, lonely, or tired. So basically, when your lizard brain is in full pelt, like, just stop and breathe, give yourself some space, maybe sleep on it, maybe come back to it later, maybe get someone else to sense check that email before you send it. Those kind of things will help to keep that lizard brain in check, but also noticing that lizard brain in each other as well. It's a bit like the tired toddler. If you've got a toddler having a tantrum, you don't try and reason with them. Do you know what? Sometimes we get adult toddlers as well. So maybe noticing those times and just step away from that argument and maybe come back to that later. So that leads us on to ninja agility. And actually, ninja agility is the fact that we can't plan for everything. So it's, how do we respond well to change? How do we set ourselves up so we've got that flexibility to respond rather than feel like, oh my goodness, everything's changing and it's outside of my control? Part of this is a mindset shift. Part of this is about recognizing I can't control everything. And so maybe I need to start focusing on what I can control. Part of it is also about recognizing that we can't plan for everything. So, maybe we need to accept that there is imperfection. Have some margin for when things, might go wrong. So when you're planning, don't plan for every single minute of the day because you can't. Be prepared for the predictably unpredictable, but also recognize that imperfection is going to happen. So some of you are recognizing this guy already. I think his video went slightly viral. I think it's a really good example of how, sometimes, especially for those of us with kids at home, sometimes this is going to happen. And, sometimes it's like, yes, that's okay. It's okay that things aren't going to be perfect. But also sometimes making sure that you make a choice in that situation.
I took quite my book, the idea of there's glory in imperfection.
Yeah.
And that old proverb, which is better an imperfect dome in Florence than a castle in the sky. And actually delivering on stuff and getting into the habit of delivering stuff, delivering your work, even though it might not be perfect yet, is actually a really good skill and a good mindset to develop. We're taught at school to make everything perfect and rule under the lines and all that sort of thing. And actually sometimes, delivering stuff when it's good enough is actually a really useful mindset to be.
And I'd also say...
Did you see the one? There was one with a woman who was on a Zoom call and she took it into the toilet and didn't realise.
Yeah, definitely. So these things are going to happen. But I'd also say, because we have had some questions come in about, like, how do I do this when I'm working from home with kids? And imperfection is absolutely the key here. Don't beat yourself up. Don't try to get everything perfect. And don't feel guilty. So if you need to say to, either way, if you need to say to your kids, wait 20 minutes, I'll come back to you, depending on the age of your kids, obviously. Or, I say to my teenage kids, go fix yourself some lunch. I'm not doing lunch today. There's stuff in the fridge. You sort yourself out. I'm not going to feel guilty about that because I know they're able to do that. But equally, being able to say to your colleagues, do you know what? I know that we said we'd meet at this time, but actually this is what's going on right now. Can you guys have this call without me? Don't feel guilty about that either. Speak up about what you need and work around each other.
Yeah, one of my little catchphrases just when managing people is people first, work second, always. And so the always is about saying, no matter what's happening, you dealing with the stuff that's in your life actually comes before you having the time and space and attention for work. And that's a really important principle, I think. Let's talk really quickly about the hidden benefits of working from home. This is not all bad, people. There's some good stuff that comes from working from home. A decade or so of mainly, sort of predominantly working from home, I can definitely attest to some of these things. So ninja unorthodoxy, things are really in flux and up in the air right now. And what that means is we get to test and trial and experiment and do things differently. So embrace the unorthodoxy, try not to hide away from it. Think about your commute. If you no longer have a commute, the thing about commutes is they're a criminal waste of our attention. Often what happens is people spend an hour of their most quality attention of the day just driving between one place and another place, or sat on a train reading terrible newspapers that are for free or whatever. So you've got that time back. Use it wisely. Maybe, make out a particular specific plan for that commute time and replace it with something really worthwhile, whether it's learning the violin or whether it's really quality work that allows you to actually free up some time later on in the day. Think about how you can experiment with your own habits. So maybe changing working hours, starting the day with something different. We talked earlier about, you know, when you start your day with email, you start your day with everybody else's list of priorities, not so just experimenting with what does a standard rhythm of a day look like and how can you change it. The doll picture on there is to say, get to know some of the quirks and weirdnesses about your colleagues, because this is a really nice thing about the social aspect here, is like you're going to get to see inside everyone else's houses. What can you see from that that just helps you to get to know those people? And there's also some scientific research that says your stress goes down if you stroke your pets. So if you've got cats and dogs at home, have them sit next to you and just looking up adoringly at you while you're working will actually reduce your stress as well.
Pet therapy,
right? Yeah. My other favorite one is, my favorite productivity acronym is non-active productivity. So how can you experiment with naps? Hey, it's a good thing. Let's talk about home time, Grace.
Yeah, so this is home instead of, you know, it's a bit like when we go out, but out. So, you know, the difference between working at home and actually home time. So what we're talking about here is having good boundaries, having some finish lines, you know, actually putting those things in place and probably deciding on that ahead of time. If you're waiting until like the late afternoon going, well, when shall I stop working? That's a harder time to make that decision. So make that decision up front. When are you done for the day? What does your working day look like? What are those finish lines? And put those things in place. Because actually switching off is a really good thing for your productivity. You know, your brain needs breaks. We need to be able to switch off. But also we need good recharge moments rather than just going on standby. One of the things I often say to people is when you stop working, when you have your downtime, do you, you know, actually do something that recharges you, or do you just go on standby? And it's very easy to end up just going on standby. So thinking about, you know, how do I recharge? How do I look after myself? Making sure the basic things like sleep, you know, sleep hygiene, phone hygiene. You know, back in the 80s, you had a lot of world leaders who'd brag about how little sleep they can get away with. But actually, all the research these days suggests that if we're sleep deprived, the long-term cognitive impairment is equivalent to being drunk. So don't do it. Don't sacrifice sleep in the name of productivity. Those of you with very young children, I know it's not, you know, it's not ideal and you have no choice, but don't do it to yourself, right? So here's the thing. Self-care, it's not a luxury. It's fuel for your productivity. What can you give yourself in order to be at your best? Because when you're at your best, you can do your best work. And you know, some of those things might not be, again, it might be imperfect. You might not be able to do all of those things right now, but maybe looking for what's the one or two small things that I can do for myself that helps me to recharge? What is it that I need? And maybe I can ask that, maybe I can give that to myself. Maybe I can ask that from my colleagues or from my family or from my household. And I think I saw earlier, there was a question about like high value breaks and how hard that is when you've got a family around you. Depending on the age of your kids, it can be a really fun activity to just actually go around the family and go, what do you enjoy doing? What is play for you? What's something that's recharging for you? And then make sure that each person has an opportunity to have some of that.
I had a really good lesson about in this at the end of last week, where I'd worked a stupid number of hours last week and I knew I was kind of running on empty and I was alone with my little boy. And one of my neighbors said, hey, do you want to just come round, leave him with me for 20 minutes and you go for a run? And honestly, I slept better that night than I had for the whole week, because, you know, that run just recharged me in endorphins and energy and all that stuff. You know, so it can be really easy to neglect these really basic things when we're in periods of high stress, lots of change, etc. And I think the same is also true of productivity in general. So I have this little saying, productivity is about making space for what matters. And, you know, right now, don't feel too guilty about the idea of saying no to things that don't necessarily feel like they're the biggest priority. It's fine to renegotiate the stuff that was on your to-do list, you know, 2-3 weeks ago versus the stuff that really needs to count now. And ultimately, we get to this place of making much better decisions and doing much more impactful work when we A, do less, and B, make the space to do that thinking of what needs to stay, what needs to go, You know, it's about using that quality thinking to help drive that sense of ruthlessness around what we're going to put our time and attention to. And, you know, it's a weird little contradiction thing, but when you do less stuff, you make more impact. Mm. So make the space for the stuff that really matters and don't apologize for what else needs to shift to make that happen. The final point I just want to make is that we've talked a little bit about imperfection already, and I think let's embrace the fact that during this period, we are human. We do have limitations. There's a lot of books that talk about productivity, almost in terms of you should be perfect and you should be a superhero. And I really firmly believe that when it comes to productivity, no one has special powers. You might look like a superhero sometimes if you're doing this stuff consistently and really, you know, driving really good productivity. Everyone else might mistake you for some kind of superhero, but let's embrace the fact that we are all human. We have limitations, and you know, really embrace that and be mindful of giving yourself that break over the next few weeks. So we're going to take some questions. Grace is just going to start looking at the Q&A and read a couple of questions out for us. Just while we're doing that, just a reminder of our contact details. We're going to talk in a couple of minutes about a couple of the other things that we have available at Think Productive. I'd love you to subscribe to my podcast. It's called Beyond Busy. I'm going to continue with episodes over this period to keep you entertained, hopefully. So please do subscribe to Beyond Busy. Just had Tim Campos on the podcast, who's the ex-CIO of Facebook. So talking about Facebook and also his new venture as well. My book is How to Be a Productivity Ninja. Grace's book is How to Be Really Productive. Those are both available. Yeah, they're on that big website, but they're also on Hive, which is a UK-based website for ordering books, and they take their stock from local bookstores. So go use Hive. Really important at times like this. And Think Productive is our company, so you can go to thinkproductive.com, give you more information on that in a sec. Grace, what are we saying on the questions? I haven't been reading the chat, by the way, so if anyone's been directing particular things at me, I haven't seen it, so put it in the Q&A.
Yeah, pop it into the Q&A. If there's something on the chat that you want answering, pop it onto the Q&A. There are a couple of things where people just wanted kind of reiterations. So Holt was hungry, angry, lonely, and tired.
And that's one I got. I picked that one up from people who are sort of managing markets and financial data and that kind of thing. And I think, you know, particularly in terms of how you make decisions during crisis times, I think it's really useful.
Definitely. Comms Manifesto, I think we're going to share that in the work from home link, right? So
yes, I don't think it's on there right now, but we will put it on there. Because this is a thing that this isn't something we developed last week. This is the thing we've been using and living by for 3-4 years probably. And it sort of grew out of our email etiquette workshop, which is all about, you know, how to think about etiquette of email and culture of email as a team. And then we thought, well, actually, hang on, this isn't just about email, it's about comms more generally and WhatsApp and Slack and everything else. So really useful thing. And even if you don't, I think it's good to, you don't have to have a nice graphically designed page, but even if you just have 5 bullet points that you send out on an email or put into a Word document or something, and that will just give people a good sense of clarity around it. And you can just do that at the start of a team meeting, 10-15 minutes just to kind of get clear. You'd be amazed actually when you do that, the kind of bugbears that people have or the things that people bring up.
Yeah. So we'll definitely share an example of that. And we'll let you know the link for where all those resources can be later. So question here, how do you find a suitable space to work if you're limited for spaces in your home or have others working from home under the same roof now? Really good question. We're really lucky that we've got everyone in a separate space here, but if you're in a flat share and things like that, it's going to be tricky, isn't it?
Yeah, and I think what I'd say on that is even if all you have is a kitchen surface or, you know, even if it's just somewhere in your living room, you know, have one chair in your living room as where you're going to work from, and then the other part of the sofa is where you sit and chill. So back to that brain signifier thing, this is real stuff, right? So actually just delineating it in your head between, okay, now I'm in relaxation mode, now I'm in work mode. I think that really helps. And also trying to minimize the kind of setup time of that. So, having stuff on a board, you know, investing in a big bit of wood or something that will just allow you to just pick stuff up, move it off the kitchen table, whatever those things might be. I'm in my shed at the bottom of my garden, as I very lovingly, affectionately refer to it as here. But yeah, if you're, you know, if you're doing this from the corner of a room, which I've certainly done myself in the past, having a way to just, you know, just investing 10 minutes in just thinking about the ways to just quickly pick stuff up and put it down and all that sort of thing, I think that really helps.
And also just negotiating. So you might be negotiating space with people. You also might be negotiating sound. So one of the things I had to say, my husband had the gardeners over trimming the hedges today. And we were like, okay, you need to be really quiet between 1:30 and 2:30 because I'm doing this. But then also imperfection as well. So just before we came online, a huge bumblebee came in here. So I had to disappear just now to open the door for it. And that's the sort of stuff is going to happen as well. There's quite a few...
couple of questions before we finish up.
Yeah, absolutely. So there's quite a few questions here about kids. So yeah, currently my children are home from school, finding it difficult to actually do my work and sit down explaining my seven-year-old's work to her. Quite a few similar sort of things around.
Yeah, and I'm in that boat too. And I was asked this the other day, and my take on this is back to that experimentation and unorthodoxy thing. So I have really good energy levels, and it's very quiet early in the morning before my son gets up. And I have less good energy, but it's also quiet and able for me, and I'm able to work after he goes to bed in the evening. So moving some of those hours of work into the times where the house is a bit more quiet and the kids are in bed or whatever, I think that can really help. That's no substitute for when you've got to be online, obviously, in the middle of the day and they're around. So I'm aware that there are, you know, there's huge challenges that a lot of people have around that stuff right now.
When my kids were little,
just trying to not be perfect with that stuff, like and trying to manage those boundaries, the bosses.
I used to have a with kids and without kids list. So a bit like your zombie and your proactive. Yeah. So when they're around, here's what I can do. When they're having a nap or they're like happy in front of the telly, here's what I can get on with. So that could be another thing with your second brain to help you with that.
Yeah, and certainly most of the things that are on my mindless list, I could do when my son is around and without sort of, you know, jeopardizing his safety, obviously. So there's, you know, there's that kind of base level, you know, first it's the duty of care, isn't it? To your kids, and then it's like, what can I usefully do during that time? And I think maybe, again, not beating ourselves up about doing the most important work when clearly we're going to be half distracted and kind of half in and half out in terms of our attention. But yeah, again, that the prioritizing the really quality attention, I think, is the most important thing.
Absolutely. What tools do you find best to maintain the social across the desk chats that you don't get in a series of formal video conferences? Do you know what? You could actually just keep Zoom open.
I do that actually. When I've just been writing a book with one of our other ninjas, Hayley. We're writing a book all about meetings, face-to-face meetings. It's due to come out in September. I think we'll probably be moving the date of that because I don't think many people are that bothered about hearing about face-to-face meetings then. But yeah, we will work for 2 to 3 hours and just do a kind of sprint of writing, but just leave Zoom open. So like, okay, Graham's typing away, he's doing his own thing, we're not collaborating, but then every now and again it's like, Hayley, have we done anything about this? Or just something might pop up. And I found that a really useful way to work. The other one is WhatsApp. I love WhatsApp voice in particular, and that thing of, I'm not sure what to do about this, but what do you think? And being able to hear that intonation in someone's voice is much more powerful in terms of communication, I think, than just an email or a text message on WhatsApp or whatever. So the voice message thing on WhatsApp, I think, is it's a really nice thing. Me and Elena, who's Think Productive's managing director, we communicate almost exclusively through WhatsApp voice. It's 95% of our entire communication is WhatsApp voice messages. And generally under about a minute long. sometimes much longer.
And I think, yeah, your meetings book does have stuff about online meetings as well, right?
It does, yeah. But I think, I think chances are a lot of stuff will get moved back, won't it?
The other thing to mention is the books as well. So any other books you recommend to read? Well, clearly, How to Be a Productivity Ninja will talk you through how to get your second brain set up, all of those things. My book is a little bit different. So people have described it as the journey, or the companion to for the journey. So if the stuff around lizard brain, the stuff around kind of switching mindset, there's a load of stuff in there that's useful for that, as well as things like ditching guilt, jumping off the guilt train, saying no, some really good examples on how to say no and set boundaries on there, as well as all the other Productivity Ninja books as well, right?
Yeah, right. So Work Fuel, I mentioned there, which is the book about how to eat to have the best energy for productivity. A couple of the other ones that I like. So we mentioned really briefly Cal Newport there and his monk mode idea. That's from a book called Deep Work, which is one of my favorite productivity books. The other one I really love is Seth Godin's book, Lynchpin, which is really nice.
So I really like Adam Grant's Originals. Really good for thinking unorthodoxy and thinking creatively, especially in times like this. Brené Brown's always my go-to when it comes to dealing with that kind of lizard brain side of things and, you know, those kind of feelings of guilt or shame and vulnerability. So yeah, she's got some really good stuff, particularly around how do we deal with like fear and uncertainty.
But she's better on TED than in books, no?
Actually, she reads her own books as well. So TED, TED Talks, yes. Her books are really good and really easy to digest. Plus, she also reads them. So if you want to listen to it on audio, audiobook, then yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, definitely.
I never read my own books on Audible. I was advised against it.
How do you keep up with the second brain discipline when you have an urgent deadline which appears more important than updating brain number two?
Well, I think the thing is, so a couple of things like that. One is, yes, if there's something like massively urgent, my second brain will go a little bit out of kilter. So I'll neglect it for 2 or 3 days for sure. And I think that's okay. The trick is not to let it get beyond the 2 to 3 days. So as soon as you can, jumping back in and doing that bit more maintenance around second brain, because ultimately it's about trust. Like when you trust your second brain that it holds everything, then you can drop everything and go and do the urgent thing because you know what you're dropping and you know it's all contained in that second brain. Whereas if it gets 3 weeks, 4 weeks down the track and you haven't been maintaining it, it's just a longer job to put it back together. So definitely don't beat yourself up if there's a couple of days where you're not, you know, feeling fully on top of second brain. I think that's really normal.
Yeah. That's a good one here.
Anything to add to that, Grace?
It's a tool. It's a tool that serves you, not something that, you know, drives you in terms of that kind of relationship you have with it.
There's definitely people send me emails saying, oh, I'm doing this to 98% and I'm doing this to 98%, but I don't feel good about it. And it's like, so I think sometimes people get too, there's a certain type of person who gets too anxious about doing productivity perfectly and productivity being the end goal. And I think neither of those things are useful.
Yeah. There's an interesting question here. How can you maintain motivation whilst world events seem to make work feel a bit pointless if you're not working in frontline services? I've got some thoughts about this. What do you think, Graham?
Yeah. Matthew, one of our colleagues mentioned this last week and I wholeheartedly agree with him. He said the people he knows that are dealing with this the best and are the happiest are the people who are on social media the least and looking at news the least. I don't really look at news beyond like a few minutes a day. I'll have a look at the BBC site. And what you'll find is everybody else sends you the stuff you need to hear about anyway. Mm-hmm. So I'm not going to sit down every day and waste half an hour of my time watching government news conferences and stuff. Likewise, Facebook and, you know, Twitter, they can be spaces that are full of kindness and nice acts and stuff, but they're also, I think, quite stressful spaces that I don't want to spend a lot of time in. So I think that's a good, you'd be surprised if you just say no to a lot of that stuff. For me, increases motivation. And I think, you know, ultimately we're in a time period right now where there's a lot of stuff that's up for grabs, a lot of stuff's going to change, a lot of stuff's under threat, and I think looking at where you sit within that challenge, either for you or your company or for your community. I think there's a whole heap of useful stuff that does not involve being working in a hospital or my neighbor works on the, my neighbor is a volunteer on the lifeboats down here in Brighton. But it's like, there's stuff that doesn't involve that stuff, but is really vital to be done right now. So I think there's a lot of reasons to do good work.
And I think so my view on this, I've thought about it a lot. I've seen a lot of particularly small business owners kind of going, well, I need to keep alive and afloat. But at the same time, the services I offer are maybe around like communication around, you know, creativity and things like that. And so my view is, look, there are going to be people who are going to be worried about how am I going to pay the mortgage? How am I going to feed my family? And if that's you, you don't, when you're in that space, you don't have bandwidth to think about anything else. So if that's you, don't, you know, just give yourself a break. Don't feel like you have to reinvent your business. You have to get, you know, all that kind of stuff right now. Just do what you need to do. Make choices that are kind to you and you and to people around you. But if you're in a position where you've got a bit more cognitive bandwidth, but maybe if you've got some buffer in your business or you've got some time on your hands, like you've got that bandwidth, then use that to, you know, to think creatively. How can I use my services to serve people, to help people? And don't, you know, now is not the time to hide that light under a bushel. Now's not the time to go, oh, but what will people think about me if I start putting that out there? It's like, if you've got stuff that will help, put it out there and do it in the service of those who don't have the bandwidth to do that.
And also, I wonder if there was something that, let's say, 3-4 months ago before all this happened, you were regularly sat at your desk thinking, oh, if only I had a month where the world, where the world stopped and I could really focus on developing that thing, you know, the website for the collage thing that you do, or, you know, a hobby that you want to learn, or a skill that you want to learn, or something that you want to put out there as a voluntary thing, or a side hustle to your work, whatever the thing is. It kind of feels to me like there's going to be a lot of people with very little time in the next 2-3 months. And there's probably also going to be some people who are finding a lot more time on their hands than they used to. And if that's you, it's a gift, right?
Absolutely.
There's plenty of downside, but maybe there's some flicker of upsides through that as well. Oh, hi, Hayley.
Hayley's gone off to bounce on the trampoline.
I'm just looking through.
Trampoline.
I'm just scrolling through the track.
Let me just share a tip. So if you're feeling really tired and you haven't moved, if you have a trampoline, go and use it. You are allowed to as an adult. Yeah. That was my secret tip. Whenever I needed to work when I was tired, when the kids were little, I would go and bounce on the trampoline. It's a great way of working.
Do you remember that? Because Hayley's got a trampoline in her house.
Yeah, that's it. She's off to bounce on the trampoline with
when,
Tom.
When I went round to do a writing day at Hayley's house, I had a great play on the trampoline. It was great. Oh, I loved it.
Brilliant.
Right, one more question. Last but definitely not least, the best question of the day.
Best. Oh, that's pressure. You look through it. Oh, what if you don't even have a chair or table, having to work from bed? Any tips? Turn your camera off.
Yeah, do you know, the thing is, the ergonomics of that are really not good. So I, in all seriousness, doing that for a long period of time, I think is really quite dangerous in terms of things like, you know, bad backs and bad posture and RSI and all this kind of thing. So I would, if that's your, if that's like really what you see as the only default that you have right now, I would ask a different question, which is, what do I need? What can I go out and get off Gumtree or from a neighbor or borrow or, you know, anything, but, you know, and actually stand up at the kitchen counter if the alternative is bed. But ergonomics are really important.
And also, maybe look at, if you're limited on space, maybe look at typing less. So like when Graham was talking about voice messages, you can record, voice messages and email them and things like that. So maybe look at where you can speak more and type less. So you're not doing this all the time.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah. So listen, guys, we've answered some of your questions, but I'm aware we haven't answered all of them. So do get in touch if there's a particular thing you'd like us to answer. So our contact details were at the beginning. But, you know, please do get in touch with us and we'll answer as many as we can. We are running these sessions as well in-house. So a lot of clients, a lot of companies have said, look, can you come and do something for us? So if your organization would like to hold this for your people, get in touch with us. The link at the bottom will lead you to all the resources for the workshop, but also the sessions that we do. So we're doing a 90-minute session in-house where we can do some action planning and make it a little bit more bespoke for like the specific policies or tech or whatever it is that's going on within your work context. We do a session called Supercharge Your Virtual Meetings as well. So if you need some help with that, we can definitely help. And also leading remote teams. So actually, do you want to talk a little bit about that, Graham?
Yeah, so leading remote teams, obviously a huge issue at the moment. So picking up on some of those things we talked about there around communications manifestos and, you know, how to have conversations with other people in the team around when are they off versus when are they on. And many other things as well. So that's something that we're just launching with some of our clients in response to what's happening as well. And not forgetting all the regular stuff that we do as well. So how to be a productivity ninja and getting your email inbox to zero. We're running all of those as live virtual sessions as well. So our normal stuff applies, and it's, you know, we're very much trying to make it as much as possible business and as usual through this period.
Yeah.
So just remains just to say thank you to everybody for being here on this call for this hour. Just a reiteration of those three workshops that we think can really help for your teams and organizations right now. And you'll find loads more detail and some really nice resources that we've put on the webpage dedicated to working from home. So thinkproductive.com/WFH, and drop us a line and let us know what you think as well.
Brilliant. Thanks so much, guys.
So I hope you enjoyed that. And thanks to a few people as part of this episode and just making this whole thinkproductive.com/WFH project happen. So I want to firstly just thank Grace for really being with me every step of the way. We wrote two new workshops in 2 weeks. And just to put that in perspective, usually they take about 3 or 4 months. So we were absolutely breakneck speeding and developing through this stuff. And me and Grace spent many hours in the week before that putting that together, just on the phone, just frantically working out where things go and how things fit together and all that stuff. And always just love working with Grace. So thank you, Grace. Thanks also to Elena, our superstar MD at Think Productive, for steering the ship just generally over the last few weeks and months. It's been, as everyone knows, it's been a pretty interesting time. But also for touching up the slides and making sure that we've got, all the sort of correct details on there. I'm a bit sloppy in the way that I do it, and Elena's a bit more detail focused. So always have to sort of have the first meal they go through is mine to create them, and then the second meal they go through is Elena's to kind of perfect them and make them good. So thanks, Elena, for that. Thanks also to Jess for putting the webpage together, thinkproductive.com/WFH. And really the whole team around the world, you know, there's been just such a lot of interesting collaboration happening, new stuff happening. And, it's been good to see. It's a really difficult time for a company like ours who, you know, predominantly work face-to-face. I still think working face-to-face is better, you know, as a learning experience, as an immersive experience, as a way of leaving the room and people have got their inboxes to zero, or they've got a plan around meetings, or they've got a plan around their own productivity. It's just better to do those things face-to-face, in my view. Having done both. But we have adapted, and a lot of our stuff has gone online, and a few of our clients have postponed stuff until the autumn, but quite a few of our clients have actually been doing stuff on Zoom and moving things in that way as well, which is very helpful in terms of the cash flow and keeping our ninjas busy and all of that. So just thank you to all of those people. Obviously, this episode sponsored by Think Productive as per usual. Thanks also to Mark Stedman, my producer on the show, and Emily, my assistant, for getting the word out around this and various other things. The other thing I just want to mention is my new mailing list. So if you go to grahamalcott.com, you'll see at the bottom of each page a little sign up form where you can sign up for my mailing list. Every Sunday, just sending out something positive for the week ahead. So sign up there. It's growing. We had like 17 people when the first one went out a couple of weeks ago, and it's now rocketing up. So really good to see. And I'm really working on trying to get round to everybody that I know and just sending them emails saying, hey, I'm doing this mailing list. Do you want to sign up? But it's just such a laborious process. It's a bit like, maybe it's one of those things that you should do at the start of your career rather than like 10 or 11 years in. But hey, I'm, better late than never, eh? Sign up to the mailing list. I'd love you to sign up to that at grahamalcott.com. And the other thing I just wanted to mention before I finish is last week's episode. So I had some really good reactions to the episode with Kat's Kylie and what she's been doing around getting PPE onto the front line. So if you go to frontline.live, you'll get the gist of it and find out more. And obviously you can listen to the episode. I mean, it was a fascinating episode anyway, but in terms of what she's doing right now, just super important. So if you know of anyone on the front line in the NHS working without the protective equipment that they need, then all they need to do is go onto Twitter and put the hashtag frontline map and then hashtag their postcode, so the postcode of where they work, and then the hashtag of what they need. So we need masks, we need this, we need that, whatever. And just put those three hashtags in a tweet. And what that will do is we'll just map it and companies are then picking that up. A lot of companies are just delivering stuff for free just to bypass a lot of the NHS procurement rules and all that, just to get the right equipment to the right place as quickly as possible. So amazing work being done by Katz there and her team, all volunteer led. Frontline.live is the website where you can find out a bit more. And yeah, I just can't emphasize enough, like, pass that message on to anybody that you know working in the NHS, working on the front line. And yeah, let's just solve this stupid, ridiculous PPE problem. It's just, it feels ridiculous. It feels ridiculous to me, by the way, that we've got people who are 100 years old, like, walking around and fundraising for the NHS as well. Like, when all this is over, can we have a conversation, please, about how the NHS should not be a charity? We pay tax and the tax should fund the NHS and that should not be cut as it has been in real terms for the last however many years. It's just, it makes me so mad that it's almost become acceptable and normal because we're in this situation that we need to fundraise for the NHS. I just think that is just a ludicrous idea. Anyway, getting on my hobby horse, I'll jump off and say goodnight, goodbye, and see you in a week or so's time. So as always with this episode, you can find a lot of further details at getbeyondbusy.com. You can find out what I'm doing at grahamalcott.com. And you can find out more about how Think Productive can help you with working from home at thinkproductive.com/WFH. We'll be back either in a week or two. You know the drill by now. I never have it quite worked out, but certainly within the next 2 weeks with another episode. So until then, take care. Bye for now.